Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. Chris Ann Hall here, KRISANNEHALL.com, where we are liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over personality. Welcome to the show, JC.
What's up?
Who's been covering for me while I was away.
Time to get serious again.
Yeah, time to get serious again. Everybody said that Thursday was a very fun show for you.
Was it? Yeah, I think I had fun.
Yeah. So we had a meaning me and the sheriffs, had an amazing time in Reno, Nevada at the Western Sheriffs Association convention. And this is something that I kind of kept under wraps on the website.
Mm-hmm.
We usually post all of the events that we have coming up. And I didn't post this one because, as you know, JC, we have so many haters in the Western states.
Yeah.
So many people, only in the Western states do I have law professors go out of their way to write articles of hatred and to smear me, right? So we kept it under wraps. Oh, only in the Western states, by the way, do I also have protesters that attend the meetings that I hold, the training sessions that I hold.
That's kind of cool.
And so what I did was I kind of kept it. It wasn't open to the public anyway. It was just for the sheriffs of the western states. So we just kept that under wraps so we would keep things calm and we wouldn't have a bunch of haters and we wouldn't have a bunch of protesters and that sort of thing. So,
You said 17?
17. The sheriffs of 17 states.
Wow.
And I taught my 3-hour workshop. You're driving me nuts, JC. What the heck are you doing?
Trying to fix the camera.
I know, man. You're like, I'd go into an epileptic fit with all those flashings on the screen.
Dr. Hall is easily distracted, in case you guys didn't know that.
So we have the sheriffs of 17 states. I taught a 3-hour workshop on you were freezing up the screen.
Nah.
Well, that's what Amelia says. It's frozen.
It's not my fault.
It's not my fault.
It's on Amelia's side.
So I had my free 3-hour Constitution training on the constitutional role and duty of the oath taker. And they loved it, JC. Absolutely loved it. Now, I can tell you that there were some haters. Well, I wouldn't say haters, but there were some skeptics. How about I put it that way? Skeptics. Mm-hmm. But overwhelmingly.
How did you gauge that? How do you know there were skeptics?
Okay, so I know there are skeptics because I've been a public speaker for 10 years, and I can sort of see people's faces when I'm teaching, and I know that. And
so by their reaction, you felt like some
and
people.
And I asked the people who were in charge if there were any skeptics out there. And they said, oh, yeah. So we had some skeptics out there. And so I'm really, really hopeful that
you,
I made them think.
Did you ask? I mean, what does that mean? Skeptic from what point of view?
The skepticism.
Like they don't want to follow the Constitution?
Well, the skepticism is the authority of the sheriff to refuse to enforce laws.
Gotcha.
Unconstitutional or laws that are contrary.
They're skeptics regarding nullification.
Yes. They're skeptic regarding nullification. But I don't like to use the N-word just because
no,
it
I'm
carries
just trying
such
to
a
get clarity on
yeah. So they were skeptics and I'm hope and but they sat through the whole class.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really, really hoping, you know, that they actually got something that made them think, right?
I've listened to your nullification class probably a couple hundred times now. I mean, I don't, it's pretty hard to argue with once you go through it. I mean, because you're no longer saying, I don't think Chris Ann Hall knows what she's talking about, so I don't believe this.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've sat through the presentation, now you have to say, James Madison's an idiot.
Right.
Thomas Jefferson's an idiot. They don't know what they're talking about. So it's hard to argue once you present the material because as with everything you teach, you know, you basically are presenting this is what the drafters of the Constitution said about the contents of the Constitution and what it means and how they intended it for to be applied. So
right, and well, and that's
I don't know where you go after that.
That's the kind of thing that I'm always telling people at the beginning of my class. If anybody walks out of this class after its completion and said, you know what Chris Ann Hall said, I know right then and there they weren't paying attention.
We're listening.
Because I always do a PowerPoint, because it's important for people to understand this is not Chris Ann's opinion. This is not her interpretation of how things, you know, how things go and what's supposed to happen. These are actual facts. This is history. These are the words of the men, as James Madison said, not just the men who wrote the Constitution, but more relevantly, those who ratified the Constitution.
Yeah, because, and that's a good, I love that quote that you had, that you referenced there, because when you think about, people say the founders. Mm-hmm. Which founders are you talking about?
Right.
Because let's say, for instance, all you read was Patrick Henry. Mm-hmm. Then you would probably be solidly on the what we call today the religious right, and you would be a religious statist, because when it came to the era, like he, now, no, I'm not trying to criticize Patrick Henry. I mean, he's a patriot, love liberty broadly.
But he was described by his peers as having an injudicious zeal.
Right, and a very, very ardent Christian man, yes, not, you know, no criticism against his faith or whatever. He certainly thought he had the best of intentions, but his perspective was practically not full on state enforced religion, but at least state supported Christianity, like state funded Christianity, mm-hmm. which then crosses the boundaries, you know, because he didn't believe in a state enforced religion, because mm-hmm. he was the one, remember, defended the 50 Baptists who were imprisoned for not taking a state license. Right. But he did believe in using public funds to fund teaching of the Christian religion. And then, of course, you know, you've taught the conversation that then was had with Jefferson and Madison and these guys saying, yo, Pat, here's the problem with that, bro. Here's the danger of that. Here's what you're doing. You know, maybe you hadn't thought this through.
Right.
We love you, and we know you love God, but here are the consequences of what you're suggesting. And so
James Madison's response was, hey, if you love God, you shouldn't be for what you're doing, right? Because you're actually supplanting God with government that kind of a program.
So back to the original point, the quote, you can't say the founders generally, mm-hmm. but to the point, you say Alexander Hamilton said that or Madison, to the point, mm-hmm. who ratified
it? It was James Madison. He was standing before the House of Representatives. He said, you know, those who wrote the Constitution, but more relevantly, those who ratified the Constitution.
Meaning you can find actually differing opinions amongst the drafters. But what opinion won the day?
What was actually ratified?
Yeah, what was the opinion that was, you know, inculcated in our founding
documents? And for those who don't know what ratified means, I mean, I don't want to insult anybody's intelligence, but we've got to assume that maybe there's some people out there that don't, know that. What ratified means are those who actually signed it into law, right? So how was the Constitution solidified into law?
What did the state delegates agree to?
Right, exactly.
On behalf of their states and their people.
What's interesting is, at the end of the day, sometimes during the ratification debates, right? At the end of the day, sometimes the things that Madison brought forward were the things that were ratified. Sometimes the things that Madison brought forward were not the things that were ratified. The debate, the discussion in the debate is relevant in understanding why they came to the final conclusion. It's not evidence for reality, right? Because I see people all the time like, oh, the Democrats in the House were doing this the whole time through the impeachment thing, right? Bringing up the argument about, or the discussion of the anti-federalists about impeachment. Mm-hmm. And well, of course, they were cherry picking and pulling them out of context and all this other stuff. But what they failed to recognize is what you said. At the end of the day, it was not that argument that was actually ratified. Mm-hmm. So that's what's really, really important.
Yeah, and I think the only place you can go from there is then you turn to Lysander Spooner, you know, and his line of reasoning, right? Because when you talk about the contract and it's a contract between the states, mm-hmm. and then Lysander Spooner would say, they don't represent me. I never voted for that. So he had a more, he kind of questioned the legitimacy of somebody, you know, the state saying we represent the state and we ratified this, and somehow that is what the people then agreed to.
Well, that Patrick Henry had the other same debate. Patrick, I Lysander Spooner came after the fact, but I believe that Lysander Spooner probably read a lot of Patrick Henry's dissent.
He really promulgated the thought process.
So Patrick Henry's argument, I mean, you can go read it. Patrick Henry's argument was, we the people. How dare you start this with we the people? It should read we the states.
Right.
But we have to understand that the Constitution is not a contract between the people.
Correct.
The Constitution, legally speaking, is a contract between the states.
Which some would say...
Which is called a compact,
right.
Which is an agreement between sovereign governments.
Which some would, in that instance, agree with Lysander Spooner. Then that leaves the door open for, hey, I didn't sign on to this.
Well, but the problem
but that's,
is...
You're not going to end that debate.
No.
That's
well,
just,
no, you're not. But those are the lines. The problem is there's a certain legal illegitimacy of that debate. Because at that same time, you could say, well, Congress, I didn't pass that law in Congress, so that law can't apply to me. Because in reality...
Some do say that.
The delegates, right, were elected by the people to create the Constitution. So anytime you have a Republican-style government, you're going to have laws made through representation. And it kind of makes me wonder if Lysander Spooner is actually arguing for a pure democracy. Because he's saying, I didn't vote for that. Well, of course you didn't vote for that, because this is a Republican-style government, not a democracy.
No, he's not arguing for a democracy. He's arguing for the opposite. Mm-hmm. Sort of an anti... just the non-state. It's really the non-state argument.
Yeah.
So, I mean, democracy in that sense still gives... gives life to the state, right? It's just ruled by many through the state.
Right.
What I think what Spooner would be on the side, I mean, that's where the anarchist argument comes in, the no state argument of saying, basically just leave me alone. I didn't ask for any of this.
Well, the right to choose to not be a part of the state if you don't want to. Because I've seen people say that. It's not my contract.
Yeah, just a, that's
it's
just
not,
a very,
it's not my contract.
Very difficult thing to live out with all of this, how the system has been built.
Yeah.
And now, of course, you know, anyone with anything close to that mindset is labeled sovereign citizen, AKA domestic terrorist.
Yeah.
So you almost have to be just, if you want to go that no state sovereign citizen, for lack of a better term, the no state route, you know, you have to sort of unplug and almost be under the radar, in the sense that you can't go around really saying a lot of that. That's the trouble with that.
So
because you're going to be targeted.
The second meeting that I was at this past week was in California, in San Luis Obispo. JC and I both really like San Luis Obispo. That's
yeah, it's a nice
really
place.
Nice place. But I can tell you, I
well,
was
much
annoyed.
Well, much of North Carolina. Northern California.
Northern California. No
very
Cal.
Beautiful.
Which is why, and they're a different kind of people.
It is.
Right?
It's not L.A.
It's not L.A. It's not even Sacramento, really. And so that's why there's several movements of Northern California to leave California behind, you know, to become their own state.
Not saying everybody in L.A. is bad.
No.
10th Amendment Center guys out there.
Yeah. I always thought was rather amusing. They're actually in the fire over there. Michael Bolton, the leader of the 10th Amendment Center, is right there in L.A. Bless his heart for actually living in there. So anyway.
He loves it.
Yeah. So, and it's not a bad place to live if you can, you know, ignore the fact that you're living in a government of tyrants. I was so annoyed. Not a single straw to be found in California. And even in San Luis Obispo, which is a small community, you know, it's like a suburban community, not like a big city community, right? It's still urban. It's not rural, but it's still urban, but it's not like that. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
It's just not like stack 'em and pack 'em. The homeless situation there is crazy. I mean, seriously. And after teaching, I learned something, JC.
Liberty cause, I agree with you. I was just referencing the term that the government uses to label you, sovereign citizen.
Yeah.
If you actually think it through, that's an oxymoron.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So anyway, what was I saying? Oh, and the
San Luis Obispo.
No, the homeless situation. I learned something. I'm teaching at the River School of Government, and we went over the Articles of Confederation on Friday. And in the Articles of Confederation, if you were a vagabond, you could not vote, right? And in English law, vagabonds were picked up and put in jail.
Wow.
Yeah. So a vagabond is pretty much a homeless person, somebody who doesn't have a residence, who travels and has no kind of tie to property or to a home. And so that was very interesting on how our Constitution has developed to be more liberty-minded, right? Even from the Articles of Confederation. But it's just crazy. I mean, I also learned this, JC. I told you this. I think you didn't even believe me. Do you know, hey guys out there, do you know that there is an app in San Francisco that shows you where to walk in San Francisco so you don't run into human feces?
Poop app.
The poop app. The San Fran poop app.
Did you see this app? Did you download the app?
No, I didn't download the app, but I did go to like six different sources of Californians who actually said, no, that's true. Because Mike Huckabee was at the same event that I was at, and in Northern California, the New California State Movement.
Uh-huh.
And he's the one that mentioned it. And I was like, no way. You've got to be kidding me.
Oh, my gosh.
Is it?
Yes.
It's called the poop map?
Poop map.
Oh, my goodness.
Poop map helps you log. What? It's a small app that helps you log all the places that you've pooped. What?
Oh, my goodness. It's an app for the people who poop.
So, like, they poop on the sidewalk and then they log in? Like, I pooped here. Put a little pin. Holy mackerel. That's crazy. Poop tracker, toilet log.
Give me a break. Michael says the crap app.
Crap app. Good, thank you. Track your poop habits easily. Analyze your poop history. Share with your doctor.
Oh, that's not the same.
No, that's different.
That's different.
When they say there's an app for everything.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Offline map.
So the one thing that I wanted to mention about the meeting I was at, and now this was in San Luis Obispo, it was a convention for the people who want to start another state from California called New California. There's also another movement, the State of Jefferson people have the same idea. There's the State of Liberty people who are doing that in Oregon, and there are several different people, seven different movements to break off states so that their state would actually represent their principles and their ideologies. But the one thing that I want to mention today is that how many young people were actually at that convention, JC. It was so encouraging. So we had 500 plus people at this convention. And JC, come on, talk about who gets distracted over here.
Holy mackerel.
So we had over...
No, I found the map. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
118,352 reported instances of poop on city streets since 2011. I mean, the whole freaking city is poop. The whole city is poop.
Wow.
I don't know. You probably, I'm not sure you can see the picture. Like, that's a picture of San Francisco.
That's the poop
And
app.
That's the poop. Like, the whole city's poop. That's crazy. It's, like, really dark, like, around the downtown. That's, like, deep brown poop. Like, really lots of poop.
Yeah, yeah.
That's insane, man. What in the world? And, you know, in San Francisco is a beautiful city.
Yeah. Oh, it's gorgeous.
I mean, aside from that.
So anyway, 500 plus people there, so many young people, so many young people. It just goes to confirm what I've been trying to tell people. And I told them, I taught twice. I taught on Friday and I taught on Saturday. And what I told them, I said, look, the millennials that you see, the snowflake millennials that you see on the college campuses, on the media, I call them media millennials because they're actually, I'm beginning to believe, JC, they're actually the minority of the millennial population. They're the ones, just like media highlights the minority view as if it were a majority, makes mountains out of molehills. I really believe that they're doing the same thing with millennials, because everywhere I go to teach, and I know this is what the argument to small numbers fallacy, but there are just so many young people out there that actually have this liberty-mindedness, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Dragon's Talon, I got it right this time. Dragon's Talon, thank you so much for your super chat for us.
What is that all about?
He says, to buy Chris Ann a pair of hip waders for when she has to teach in San Francisco.
Amen. Yeah, that looks, that's quite a mess. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I found it though. It's legit.
Yeah, it
for
is
real.
Legit.
Human waistline.
So don't be discouraged. I'm telling you, there's a whole millennial population out there
who are like you.
They're like, just leave me alone. Just let me be. Let me live. And as long as I'm not hurting someone else, then you got no business with me.
I already told him I'm an extreme minarchist. Maybe I said that while you were here, but.
I'm
borderline anarchist.
Right.
It's like I said, the president thing, and people, I don't know what it was, the show that I did, and so I started getting all these messages about who I supported for president, Trump, like whatever. It was kind of crazy. I don't know what I said that maybe was confusing. So, but I don't support any president. And this is where maybe I go farther that way than you do. The whole idea of, you know, voting, having the privilege of voting who's going to rule over me every 4 years. No thanks. I'm not
into
that.
But you realize, JC, whatever. And I totally get you. That's right. But you realize that the president is not supposed to be a ruler.
No, I get it.
So
but,
if we're operating under the proper parameters of the Constitution, then your electoral college is choosing the president that will best represent the principles and the ideologies of the people of the state to represent the state in foreign affairs. So
at the end of the day,
it's hard to really get beyond the fact that we're just simply operating post-constitutional.
Yeah, no, I get it. I just think we get along so well, and you know, we have these discussions. So oftentimes there's an assumption that somehow we're mirror images of thought on, like, you think this way and I think the same way.
Oh.
I mean, we're generally in the same direction, but
we go in the same direction.
I'm a little more extreme on
other
things, and you have.
And JC's a lot more cynical than I am most of the time.
I am
very optimistic.
I think that's why I'm less serious, because I have to, like, I need that. So my cynicism doesn't destroy my mind.
Can you guys out there recognize the irony in what JC said?
How's
Do you
that?
Know how many people text me, why doesn't JC ever smile? JC needs to know how to have fun. He's always so serious.
But have you explained to them that is kind of me pranking? Like, I do that just to poke, like, if I sit here all mean looking, then you're going to get those questions. And then I'm entertained by the fact that people are asking, why is he so serious? So anyway, so it worked. But that's just my twisted humor. So even that's on purpose.
Yeah.
I love that anarchy is never the answer. That's another thing when you say, so the anarchism, people understand anarchism in the colloquial sense.
Right.
Right. So they don't most people don't understand the political definition of anarchism. Mm-hmm. So you get that a lot of reaction.
Well, but
you want to set the world on fire and break windows?
I think, well, and you can say what you like, but I think that that both Locke and Montesquieu give the best definition of anarchy in its political sense, in that it's really a transition from one form of government to another by human nature. It's like Adam said, if men were angels, you would need no government. The problem is to live in a state of no government is an impossibility for a long period of time based on human nature.
Yeah,
and it either is a transition into a constitutional republic or a liberty-based government, or a transition into a statist-based government.
Yeah, which is why I stop at, I'm an extreme minarchist. And I think many of the political anarchists that I would talk to, they accept, you know, that side, the utility of the state in that sense. But usually the thought process is a weighing in the sense of, yes, we understand the potential uses of government, but actually look at its history and the destruction far outweighs the benefit. The blood spilled, the murder and all that by the state far outweighs what benefits that the state could provide on behalf of the people collectively. That's usually how the anarchist thought process goes. I'm not saying that's where I'm at, but I lean farther there than, you know, I'm closer there than your typical Republican conservative statist.
I want to take a little commercial break for just a second and show everybody that we got our new Liberty t-shirts in. I'm so excited. I have been praying for our own Liberty Addict t-shirt. The one that you've seen me wear before was actually a gift from the guy who had the design made. And then he graciously gifted us with the design. So I'm really excited about that. And JC has his prank shirt on, where I buried the bodies is none of your business.
Yeah, and the camera's not behaving today, it's not focusing like a...
So I just, this is our little commercial break. Go to chrisannhall.com and get your Liberty Addict t-shirt. I love this design. It's just amazing. And everything that you do when you do that, you help us out. And in the commercial break, I want to mention to you as well that if you support us, I don't know, you find the support things. Oh, there it is, the anchor support button.
Yeah, let's just say if you support us, go to the store.
Are we having anchor trouble?
Yeah, I need to resolve something, so I don't want to do that. But
yeah,
you can go to the store and we have more shirts than what we're wearing.
Right, obviously.
You know, and all that kind of stuff. So.
Also, you can go to chrisannhall.com. And at chrisannhall.com, there's a donate button. Now, you can donate there. And you don't have to go through PayPal. Mm. And if you don't want to use a credit card, if you go to the donate button, there's actually a P.O. box where you can mail a check to. And I want to say thank you. Just publicly in our little commercial spot, I want to say thank you to whomever it was that sent us the case of colloidal silver lozenges.
Yeah, it was.
That was a really kind gesture. I was going to do that.
It was
church
morning. Morning Star Church. I can't remember.
Morning Star Church.
I'll have to look at it.
I am so grateful for that. That is what a kind thing to do. And I think it's everybody knew that I had the flu pretty bad, and so. I'm really grateful for those.
Yeah.
So post-commercial, I want to talk about a question that keeps coming up, JC. The issue of inalienable rights, and natural law. And all of this, I don't know if you've seen a bunch, because you watch the emails that come in, and I watch the social media that comes in. And I don't know if you've been seeing a lot of emails come in on this topic, but it's because I published one of our Daily Journal shorts. And the Daily Journal short was the, I don't remember. It was a Daily Journal short about this kind of thing. And so, and it was in episode 1048 that I talked about it, right? And so the question that I keep getting is, if they're inalienable, how can you lose them, right? So if they're inalienable rights, how is it that you can lose your right to keep and bear arms? Well, here's the thing that we need to understand about that classification of inalienable. Okay, it's inalienable meaning no man can take it from you, right? But liberty is not as the Bible says, we should not use our liberty for licentiousness, right? So Benjamin Franklin says, liberty knows no bounds other than you cannot harm or control the right of another. Mm-hmm. So when you use violence, when you use a gun to hurt someone else or threaten someone else, the government is not taking that right from you. Your act against someone else's liberty, life, or property is the forfeit of that in your own responsibility.
You're surrendering that right through the violation. You're surrendering a portion of your liberty through violating someone else's liberty.
Right, because in reality, when you do that, you're not simply violating Florida Statute 3.7952, right? You're violating the supreme law, which is natural law.
Yeah.
So the Florida statute or the Oregon statute or the California statute that makes murder illegal is a statute that falls in confirmation with natural law.
Yeah.
Meaning you, by natural law, I have a right to life. I have a right to secure my own life. You don't own me, so you don't have a right to take my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so laws that that penalize you for murder or robbery or theft are laws that are simply enforcing the supreme natural law that I am born with by the nature of my creation, my ultimate right to live.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to be clear about something because I had some questions come in, JC. Well, if I commit this act, how is that forfeiture? What about my rights to a trial? All that. Okay, let's be clear. Committing an act in the eyes of the law does not remove your rights.
Yeah.
Conviction.
By a jury of your
peers. By a jury of your peers. That's why due process exists.
Right. That's the protection of that. Yes. So that's the principle within natural law, right? You violated his right, you forfeit. You violate his liberty, you forfeit some portion of your liberty. But then there is a protection where that...
For you, even in that act.
Yeah, the protection is for the criminal.
Right.
The accused. The accused, because...
Yes.
Anybody can bring an accusation, right? So if the king is a protection, like from the king who just says you did this and therefore I'm going to take your stuff.
Yeah, by English law, the king could accuse you of, could charge you with treason. You could be shot on sight.
So you have to be judged by your equals.
You have to be judged by your peers. Now, I sort of want to, because there is a tendency to do that, judged by your equals. But what is the definition of that? Why is it a jury of your peers? And I think because we don't teach that jury of your peers thing is why we don't, as a society, understand jury nullification, mm-hmm. right? So a jury of your peers, as described in the Sixth Amendment, it doesn't say you have a right to a trial by a jury of your peers in the Sixth Amendment. It's a right to a trial in the district in which the crime has been committed, right? Well, the peers is defined as people who live in the district where the crime was committed.
Your tribe. Yeah, why? Somebody, Rabbit, mentioned my favorite topic, tribalism.
Right.
Anarchy leads to tribalism. Tribalism is inherent in the nature of mankind.
Yes.
Tribalism will rise in any system.
Any system.
And in fact, it's at an extreme level now.
Yes.
In the system we have. So, tribalism is not a consequence of any political system. Tribalism is part of human nature.
Right, right.
And there are things that can make it entrenched in the negative, and then there are things that affect it to the positive.
So why it's called a jury of your peers, defined as the state and district in which the crime was committed, was because the people who are sitting on the jury have to be subject to the very law that the accused is being charged with violating, so that the people in the jury are an essential check and balance on the creation of laws. So if you the word equal could be applied in any way. It could mean a lot of different things. We're equal in economic station, we're equal in sociological station, and we're equal in education. But the real peer definition is the state and district where the crime has been committed, because the job of the jury is to determine guilt or innocence. But there's a third job, to determine the lawfulness of the law. Mm-hmm. So a state and district where the crime is committed is the pool from which the jury comes. So when the jury looks at the law and says, wait a minute now, that doesn't sound right. Because even if the accused did everything the law says he did,
is this a just law?
Is this a just law?
Right.
Should this be, I think better yet, should this action actually be a crime?
Yeah, because...
And so the jury can say, in spite of the fact that the accused has done absolutely everything, this is an unjust law. What he's done should not be unlawful. Therefore, I'm not going to find him guilty of the crime.
Yeah, because if you accept the principle that any form of government is an outgrowth mm-hmm. of individuals,
right?
You know, coalescing collectively, mm-hmm. right? Then you can never put the state over the individual. So at every point of the process, the individuals as a community have a right to judge, you know, right and wrong.
Right, absolutely.
Good laws, bad laws.
You
can't say just because it's a law, then I have to follow it. That's not government by the people. That's government over the people.
Yeah. So what I think the best way to understand why that's possible. Okay, so when you think about how a law is formed, right? So who writes the laws? Those in government write mm-hmm. the laws. Who enforces the laws? Those in government enforce the law.
Yeah.
When you are accused of the law, of violating the law, who prosecutes you? Those in government. If you can't afford an attorney to represent you, who will defend you in the accusation of that loss? Yeah. Someone in government. Now the final leg, who sits in judgment if it's not a jury? The judge, who also works for
the people,
the government,
the state government, right?
So in a legal society where the government makes the laws, enforces the laws, prosecutes violations of those laws, defends those who are accused, and sits in judgment of those accused, government in every realm, how do you even possibly believe that you have any hope of real due process and justice?
Yeah.
Well, you don't, unless you have a jury built of the people who are from the state and district where they're from, where they can say, wait a minute, that's not a just law, I'm not going to find them guilty.
Because ultimately, the true definition of government is the people, right?
Right.
When you talk about government in the sense you all just...
All power comes from the people.
Yeah, the government in the sense you were just referring to is really the representatives that the people have put into positions mm-hmm. to do a task for them. So ultimately, we really use that, the word government, we really use it inappropriately because mm-hmm. really in every sense, the people still remain the government, right?
Right.
If you want to be technical, we are the government, right? And what we loosely refer to as the government are actually representatives of the government, mm-hmm. right? Because they actually represent us, but we are the ones that are supposed to govern. Mm-hmm. So I think and maybe that's another sort of trick of the statist and the tyrannical system, because, you know, that's always the first principle, seize the language. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, way back, that term, the government, was really stolen from us.
Yes.
And took on a different definition, because mm-hmm. we're the government. We're governing the judges.
Right.
We're governing the legislators. They're doing a task for the government.
We're
us.
The new government, though. I mean, in reality, when historically speaking, government were those who governed over us. Government yeah. were those who ruled over us.
Right.
So until our constitutional republic, the majorities of governments in society were rulers over the people.
But that was always the fight,
right? Our constitutional republic turned it upside down.
But that was always the fight.
It was always the fight.
Even as you teach your what you call the genealogy of the Constitution, right. Those five liberty charters, even through English historical law, mm-hmm. that was always, you know, the struggle of the people saying, no, there are rights that we have. And that's what's interesting when you teach that class that brings out people think in really sort of stark boundaries of, you know, hey, 1776 and this started and it was all of a sudden we had, we recognize that we have these natural rights. But the people way back then recognized they had natural rights. And as their understanding grew, then the struggle also grew when they realized, wait a minute, you're doing things, government, king, you're doing things that are illegitimate because you don't own us, you didn't make us, you didn't create us, therefore you don't have the legitimate right to treat us in this manner. And so that was always the struggle of really who is the government.
Right, exactly. And that's what the English ancestry tried to change when they went from a pure monarchy to a limited monarchy, which transformed us into who we are.
And you talk about this, like one of the core things you talk about. Rabbit brings up a good point and some of these other guys.
What's the point?
It's a dynamic system, right?
Right.
So it's not one thing. So one of the things that people bring up in the chat room, that's that one ingredient of this is as who was it? Adams says, or maybe Samuel Adams, John Adams, one of those guys that says you have to have a moral, a virtuous people and an informed people, right? So mm-hmm. it takes an educator, right? That jury,
educated. No people will tamely surrender their liberties nor be easily subdued when knowledge is diffused and virtue.
Right,
knowledge and virtue.
So when you lose,
Samuel Adams.
When you lose knowledge and virtue, right? When people don't understand the principles of liberty, when they're not virtuous people, then that's when the foundation actually starts to collapse. The jury doesn't work right. The people don't recognize who that judge works for. They don't recognize who the legislature works for. So when we lose, and that's why we've said often, I think the education realm is really the biggest battlefield, particularly these public universities, public schools, brainwashing centers, mm-hmm. propaganda centers, because they are the ones actually attacking the very foundation that makes all of this function properly.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So we.
So it's not one thing, right?
No.
It's not one thing. It's a dynamic arrangement of various ingredients. And when you lose one, just like how you talk about the First Amendment has five liberties, and you use one, any one of those affects any of the other four if you lose them.
Right.
So our arrangement of all of the protections that our government, you know, our system has to protect our rights, they all work together. So really, when you weaken any portion of it, you weaken all of it. You weaken every other portion of it.
Right. Now, in understanding, so I hope that I just sort of want to sum up the hope we answered the question about the inalienable right thing. When you violate the rights of another, okay, the protection in your violation is the protection in that is the due process. The proving beyond a reasonable doubt, not just simply the testimony of one, right? In even in English law, you could never be convicted by the testimony of one.
Right.
There had to be two or more witnesses, and so you have to review the credibility.
Goes back to biblical principles.
Yes.
You know, a lot of that particular society was heavily influenced by the Bible, and you had structures even from the Old Testament of in the mouth of two or three witnesses, more than one witness. It couldn't just be somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting thing, even psychologically. And it's funny to me, all of the criminal justice system, there's such a prominent role for eyewitness testimony.
Right.
And almost all psychological studies have shown eyewitness testimony is so incredibly unreliable.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons, I think, going back to the biblical principle, you better have more than one witness, because the stuff is so shaky that you need to be able to listen to all these different views and find the truth in it. I was just looking back at Michael Brown shooting and going through all the details of the evidence and the witness testimony, and that was so critical there, and you know, was manipulated mm-hmm. to create a situation. Now, I mean, obviously you can point to many instances legitimately of police brutality, but it was funny in that particular case became the sort of poster child case. It was probably the worst because mm-hmm. of how eyewitness testimony was manipulated to create a narrative to cause, you know, this chaos.
I want to mention really quick.
That's very important. Yes. It's very important. You got to have educated people and people willing to stand, and then you got to work the system properly.
Well, I also want to mention really quick that somebody anonymously supported us.
All right.
Today's show.
Awesome.
So I want to say thank you to whoever.
Thank you,
Anonymous.
Thank you, Anonymous.
Anonymous.
We're supported by Anonymous.
Oh, there you go. Q supports.
Don't mess with us.
Don't mess with us.
Anonymous.
So in this understanding of
what happened to Anonymous, by the way? Are they even a thing anymore? Like, they vanished.
I don't know.
They get.
I don't hang in those circles.
You know, it's funny, right?
They morphed into Q.
No, but now, what's his name? Assange is locked up. And then, where's Anonymous? What happened to Anonymous?
Mm-hmm.
So was he Anonymous?
Assange.
Was he running the whole thing?
And Anonymous begin with the same letter.
And by the way, I don't know if you've been listening to this conversation. There's this whole notion of Assange about to get brought back,
uh-huh.
right? Extradited here and start to talk and spill the goods on what he has. And Hillary Clinton. And Hillary Clinton, right, the courts just gave permission to Judicial Watch to depose Hillary Clinton. And then Julian Assange is on the verge of being released back to the United States. And some say he's got the kill switch on. He's going to spill the beans, give the whole cash of what he has. Hillary Clinton, you better, she might finally be the one needing bodyguards and a bailout.
Well, I don't know,
need
man.
A bail bondsman. Anyway, so I just thought that was interesting.
Philip Haney was suicided just recently.
Really?
Which helps me believe that there's still a lot of power in that realm.
The Clintons have a big network, a big dangerous network.
And
but you know, it just seems like
the Department of Homeland Security is the key that suicided Philip Haney. So.
You know, and maybe this is wishful thinking, but it sure seems like the boundaries keep shrinking, man. The noose seems to be tightening. Maybe that's wishful thinking, but
so as the end, as the next section in our show, I want to talk about why this upcoming Senate election is so critical. And I actually did a little bit of research.
Because the communists are coming.
No. It's even more than that. So I did a little bit of research. I learned some things today, JC. Did you know there are three classes of senators?
Okay.
So there are three classes.
That sounds crazy.
I know, it sounds crazy. That's why I looked into it. But it's not really as crazy as it sounds. They're not like class 1, 2, 3 in hierarchy. What class 1, 2, and 3, when you look up Senate elections, you'll see class 2 senators are up for election.
I got you.
They have them divided in thirds.
Yeah,
so you, to describe which ones are up for election.
Because how the election cycle falls.
Right, exactly. So we don't have the election of all 100 at one time.
Right.
So
the staggered 2 years, right?
Staggered every 2 years.
Is it six-year terms?
Six-year terms staggered
every
2 years.
So therefore thirds.
So the class 2 senators are up for election this term, which are the senators.
So it'd be class as in like high school graduation.
Like passive class. Like, high school class,
like,
right?
By year.
33 senators are in the class 2, 34 are in class 3, and 33 are in class 4.
Wow, so maybe I learned something new. So then, does that mean every 2 years, that number of senators are up, that number of seats are up for grabs?
Every 2 years, 33 or 34 seats
unless there's some sort of out-of-sequence vacancy, which happens.
Well, they still have to be
which sometimes
elected.
They either have special, they have appointment, depending on the state.
Well, they're appointments. They don't get to elect them out of class order.
But sometimes there'll be special elections, or
right.
some states
but
do appointments.
But then they would still have to elect them at that time, right? So
okay, now I learned something.
Alabama, Alaska, Arkansas, Colorado, Delaware, Georgia, Idaho, Illinois, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Mississippi, Montana, Nebraska, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Oregon, Rhode Island, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming.
Booyah!
Those are your class two senators. Now listen to this now. The election that's going to be held in 2020. The winners, well, let me just, this is the key that I wanted to talk to you about. In 2014, in the last regularly scheduled class election for the Senate seats, Republicans won a net gain of 9 seats from the Democrats and gained a majority in the Senate. The Republicans defended that a majority in 2016 and 2018 and held 53 seats. Right now, we are 53-45. Okay? So
I love this stuff. This is stuff I love.
Yeah.
The politics of it.
The psychology of Republicans. So there are only eight Senate seats difference in the majority.
Right.
Okay? Now, when you think about it, and I mean just from a blank slate perspective, there are 33 seats up for election.
Right.
Okay? Now, you can make your argument of what's a real election seat, what's not a real election seat, and the incumbent this or the incumbent that, right? But in reality, there are 33 seats up for election. Some people may not have anybody opposing, which means you would take that off, but that seat is still up for election, right? So, with 33 seats up for election and only an 8-seat margin for majority, you have to realize how important. Why are you shaking your head?
Sorry.
People think you're shaking your head.
No. I'm listening. I was just checking on a. You know, you got my mind spinning here. So I'm now.
I hope I got their mind spinning.
No,
too.
Now I'm checking on particular elections.
Yeah.
And so I was actually interested in the South Carolina primary. Now that you said that, that would mean that Lindsey Graham would be up for re-election. But South Carolina is not even having a Republican primary. So that means Lindsey Graham is, I mean, does that mean Lindsey Graham is completely unchallenged?
Well, he might be challenged by a Democrat or a Libertarian.
No, I understand that. We want Lindsey Graham out, but we don't want him replaced with a Democrat.
Right.
So no Republicans are running against this idiot? Come on, guys. What are you doing? Oh, that stuff gets my blood pressure up. I don't understand that. See, because here's the thing, man. One of the primary problems, really probably the prime problem, is not AOC. You know, you're gonna get me ranting like I did in that other show, man. The prime problem are not these radical Democrats. It's the frickin' status Republicans like Lindsey Graham. Yet the people in South Carolina, see, the only thing I can conclude is that the people of South Carolina, and I realize it's a military state, it's a huge minority population, they're a statist population. The Republicans, and not all of them, obviously, we know many of them personally, but apparently the majority of Republicans in South Carolina are a bunch of statists. Bunch of freaking warmongering statists. Which makes sense. And again, we're both veterans sitting here. I'm a veteran saying this. But it makes sense. It's a big military state. And so many freaking military Republicans are a bunch of daggum statists. Although back
daggum.
In the... Although I'm getting Southern. I'm going back to my roots here. But you know, I remember now the military in large majorities backed Ron Paul, back when Ron Paul was on the move. Where are you? Where are you? Where are you in South Carolina? What is going on?
Yeah.
Freaking South Carolina. Come on, guys. Help out the rest of your fellow countrymen here. South Carolina, get that idiot out of there. Get a good Republican. We don't want him booted out for a Democrat, you know, because maybe there's one thing, like he's going to be better. But come on, man. Oh, my God. The guy's awful. Awful, awful. And he's been reelected how many times?
I want somebody...
South Carolina, you suck.
I want somebody in there that will respect the rights of the people, respect the Constitution. The odds of finding that in a Democrat are slim. So I don't know. I don't know. I mean, you've got... you know what, JC? I read somewhere Biden actually won the Democrat primary in South Carolina.
He did. Yeah. Hugely. Right? Hugely.
Which supports your idea of the whole statist thing.
Well, you know, that's just the...
Because Biden is...
No, for sure. But that's the Democrat primary. I don't know if you can, you know...
But even in the Democrat realm.
Yeah.
They're the more war-facing kind of people.
That's true because... You know,
Bernie's no war.
Bernie would have been that's a great point that you make, because Bernie would have been, and this is not a pro-Bernie statement, but Bernie would have been the anti-war candidate, right?
Yes, on the Democrat side.
Correct. So Biden definitely is the pro-war candidate. So you're right. You're right. Even in the Democrat realm, it's a more statist, mm-hmm. you know, kind of look.
Can I remind everybody, while you're listening right now, go down and...
Man, I feel like we'd go for 2 hours.
I know,
tonight.
I really do,
like,
too.
Come on.
I was about to...
Preach!
I was about to tell everybody when we started, I apologize, I'm stupid tired today because I've flown from one coast to another twice in 4 days. I've had 4 nights of less than 5 hours sleep, and JC, tell them, I've been walking around like a zombie today.
Yeah, and this is a lady who just doesn't sleep. Like you go.
So I want to remind you, if you're listening, while you're listening right now, click on the thumbs up, click the like button, subscribe, and share. The algorithms, we need people, we really mess up the social media algorithms that are built against us when you hit the thumbs up, the like, the share, and all that stuff. So I want to show you. Now, all of that has to do... don't you say that out loud.
I get to read the chats, man.
Don't you say that out loud.
Anita, okay. That's funny.
Okay, so, yeah, if you want to be on the inside joke, you're going to have to follow... You're going to have to come live with us and be in the chat
YouTube,
room.
You got to watch the chat room.
Live on YouTube, watch the chat room, okay? You're not allowed to say that out loud. So the whole point that I'm trying to show you about the 33 seats... Right?
Yes.
Why this is such a critical Senate election is because of the activity of the judiciary.
Right.
That's coming up. Now, a lot of people will be like, oh, well, that's why the president is so important. That's why we need a right president. But I want to remind everybody, the president does not appoint judges. The president nominates judges. It's the Senate that appoints
the
judges.
So the Senate is critical.
The Senate is critical in 2020.
So if you want the judges that Trump might appoint that are solid, we have to have
a Senate majority.
Maintain the Senate.
And you need to have enough in the Senate. I would say enough in the Senate beyond the majority to shut up the activist liberals in the minority, right?
Yeah.
I'm serious. You need an overwhelming number in the Senate. We really should be working hard in the Senate this term because of the judicial appointments that are coming up. Now, I don't have it in front of me.
I hope whoever gives Trump his recommendations, because the last go around, it's been Federalist Society. And they seem to have, when I look at what the slate that they put, it's like they try to give a well-rounded option. So you get Gorsuch, who's solid, right?
You know, I was.
And then you get Kavanaugh. It's like, well, we have to have variation. So we give kind of a conservative status kind of guy, you know. So it's like, but obviously it's going to be better in most instances than somebody like Ginsburg or somebody like Sotomayor, right?
Yeah. Kavanaugh's going to be better.
Kavanaugh's not, a lesser of evils category.
Lesser of evils. But in Gorsuch, reality,
perfect.
Well,
almost perfect.
Thank you.
Almost perfect.
Thank you.
Great choice. But of the slate presented,
all right, so here's,
great choice.
I was writing something for someone. I'm not going to say
this. And it was awesome.
I was writing something for someone. And I'll tell you, JC, you read it.
I wish you could take credit for it. But it was awesome.
I was writing something for someone. And do you know, I wanted to find a place to slip in this line. I believe that history might show that Gorsuch is one of the best Supreme Court justices that we will have had in the last 50 years.
Yeah, no question.
And that's and I truly, truly believe that history will play that out. Now, he may not be the most popular in the last 50 years, but I believe that he will be the most... Now, the bar is not very high.
No, but can
he
I...
He will be the most constitutionally solid justice.
No, I'll reinforce that.
He leaves Scalia.
I was gonna say, okay, so of all we had, right, Scalia was probably the best. However, Scalia has some serious, serious black marks.
Especially
on
when we talked about this the other day, JC, when you weren't here. Especially when it deals with the Chevron decision. When it comes to...
Or Kelo.
The role of... Well, and Kelo's kind of in the same thing. The power of the federal government to regulate private
property.
So
as good as Scalia may have been...
He is in
Gorsuch's light years.
Absolutely. So, but here's the thing. You are never, never going to get a Gorsuch with a Democrat Senate.
No, not even close.
Never.
No.
See, that's the crazy thing. We talk about that sometimes. You'll get a Kavanaugh with a Republican Senate.
Right.
But you won't with a Democrat Senate.
Right.
You're going to, with a Democrat Senate... You're gonna get a Sotomayor. You're gonna get a Kagan. You're gonna get a Ginsburg with a Democrat Senate. Yeah. And that's why this coming up election is going to be so very critical. And not just from a presidential perspective, but in the Senate. Let me mention...
Would you say this is as... In the Senate, because people say this...
Because you're going to get another Supreme Court justice in the next 4 years.
People,
you're going to get the appointment of another Supreme Court justice.
And people say this about the presidency, but I think it's more significant in the Senate. Would you say this is probably one of the most critical election cycles for the Senate in, say, the last century? Or 50 years. Let's say 50 years.
Well, let me just say that the fact that...
Meaning to hold... We have to hold it. Have to have a majority.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Number one, because of the judiciary. Number two, because the House majority is off the chain. Right? Because remember, not only is the Senate the one who makes the appointments of judges, the Senate makes the treaties.
Right? Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's not just Supreme Court. It's the federal
judges,
the entire federal judiciary.
Federal judges. There are actually over 100 federal judicial seats still open.
Yeah.
Right? So,
and
there will be more open in the next 5 years.
And you say guaranteed one SCOTUS, but possibly more.
But possibly two. Possibly two. In this Senate, upcoming Senate term.
I don't want to press this to the extent that it's inappropriate, but why do you say at least one for sure? Is that because of Ginsburg? You don't feel like Ginsburg will last another term? I'm not saying that to be cruel or whatever, but she doesn't seem to be in good health.
Okay.
She's very up there in age.
Yeah. So.
So you don't see her last.
No, I don't see. I don't see her being allowed to last.
Yeah.
Okay, because there is not
and,
just simply a problem
I,
with her
and,
health.
And listen, I
there's
don't...
There's a problem with her competency.
Yeah.
And
I don't wish ill will on anybody. No, I would like to see her resign and then live, many more years.
Yeah.
But she doesn't... She hasn't looked well.
No.
She hasn't looked well.
And she's ancient old. So her health is bad. She's had cancer. I don't know how many times she had a stroke. She fell down. Whatever.
Yeah. I don't like her decisions, but I'm not gonna. I don't wish ill health on her.
Bless her
but
heart.
She looks. She doesn't look. She hasn't looked good. And so, she does, and you're right, she doesn't look like she has the vitality point, to last very long.
The point that I'm trying to make, because we're a few minutes over today, and like you said, JC, I think we could flow for a while tonight.
I think so.
But if people see that we're over an hour on YouTube, they're like, I'm not listening to that. So, anyway, this is essential, because what's going to happen if 100 seats are chosen by a Democrat Senate who has promised to create activist judges, mm-hmm. right? With a Republican Senate, you might get somebody that's Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
But you could get a Gorsuch.
Right, right.
You could get 100 Gorsuches at the lower court level. Yeah. You're never going to get that with a Democrat Senate.
Which probably seven out of ten opinions with Kavanaugh, you're gonna be okay with, but you know you're gonna have problems. You know, maybe that's generous, but you're gonna be okay. I would say most of the time, Kavanaugh. If you're focused on liberty,
Gorsuch.
If you're focused on liberty, you're gonna be wow. This guy is awesome.
Now the statists aren't gonna like Gorsuch.
No.
The establishment rhinos are not going to like Gorsuch because he's
liberal. No, they think Kavanaugh's great.
Yes.
That's their guy.
Yes.
Whatever. It's fine.
Whatever. So tomorrow, while JC is at school, we are going to go over.
Class. Last time I have to listen to this Marxist nitwit. Teach her nonsense.
All right, we can have a party for you.
But let me say this last thing, and this means absolutely nothing, and people can debate this. But I really feel in my spirit that maybe Roberts resigns in this next term. I don't know why.
There's several
logical argument for that, but it's like I feel in my spirit like this guy might resign.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, tomorrow I'm going to show you 7 important cases that the Supreme Court will hear in 2020. 7 of them. I'm also going to show you a case about Sheriff Arpaio that makes my head explode. So we're going to talk about this, because this case with Sheriff Arpaio, because remember Arpaio was pardoned, okay? This case with Sheriff Arpaio is another piece of evidence of the hypocrisy of the liberals regarding nullification.
Yeah.
It is just bam, and I'm going to show you that. So make sure you tune in tomorrow. Make sure you understand that we're going to blow this out of the water tomorrow. You can't miss this. But we need to start really, really hunkering down and getting control of this Senate. This is going to be important. Remember, yeah. The president only nominates these appointments. It is the Senate that actually makes them. And if you get... I don't think this is going to happen, but if Bernie wins, the Senate can stop his appointments.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a Ginsburg if you have a solid majority in the Senate. The Senate can refuse to confirm anyone that is not meeting the constitutional standard.
Right.
So
true. So either way, whether you have a Democrat president or Republican president,
yes,
still the Senate is the preeminent issue.
Right. So if Trump wins and you get a Democrat majority in the Senate, you're not going to get a Gorsuch.
Yeah.
You're not going to get Gorsuch anywhere on the federal level.
Right.
They're not going to let that happen.
No. With Democrat, you like you said, you get a Kagan, you get a Sotomayor, you get a
Ginsburg.
I mean, come on. So you can't let that happen. Like, we have the opportunity, if a vacancy comes up, you have the opportunity to fill that, to keep a Sotomayor, Kagan, Ginsburg off of the court for the next, 40 years? Come on. So, yeah, the Senate really is the biggest
right.
thing. And Dale mentioned being on for an hour, you did the C-SPAN interview, which was 3 hours.
3 hours,
and
yeah,
was
yeah.
phenomenal.
Oh,
so if you guys, you. If you guys have not seen that, it's what is C-SPAN Book TV?
C-SPAN.
Yeah.
No, C-SPAN In Depth.
Yes, yeah, the program is In Depth.
In Depth.
It was C-SPAN
on
Book TV.
Yes.
The program is called In Depth. And Chris Ann did a 3 hour interview, man.
They only let me go to the bathroom once.
It is phenomenal. So thank you, Dale, yes. for mentioning that. If you haven't seen that,
yeah.
check that out.
Yeah.
You got that on somewhere linked on the website or
I don't know if it's linked on the website.
Up and, you should throw that
you
up on
should
YouTube.
Talk to Aaron and get him. I can't throw it
yes,
up on YouTube.
Yes. We
I can't throw it up on YouTube because I can't download it for myself. But it's still on C-SPAN Book TV.
You're right. We should make a page. We should make a place for that on
yes,
the website.
You should get with Aaron.
I was phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Yeah.
And that was the program where you had liberals.
We got a lot of liberal
you had liberals calling you, emailing you, that said they this was amazing. This was like a God thing. The one email I remember you got that said, I couldn't sleep. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't sleep. And I just, something just woke me up. I had to get out of bed and I just turned the TV on just to watch because I couldn't sleep. And there you were. And I was just riveted and liberal. This is a liberal emailing and said, you made me think and I may have to re-examine some of my positions.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that was amazing. That's 3 hours, and it was amazing.
Jim says something important here just before we go. He says, imagine Bill Ayers on the Supreme Court.
Oh, my God.
Okay, but let me put it to you this way. Imagine Eric Holder on the Supreme Court.
Which they've talked about.
Imagine Barack
which they've talked about.
Obama
which
on
they've
the
talked
Supreme
about.
Court. Okay,
absolutely.
Those are real viable issues because they have talked about that.
And by the way, a wishy-washy Senate would approve a Barack Obama. They would confirm a Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm. They would because
remember even back in the day, who was that? Even Rand Paul, right? Even Rand Paul said he voted for somebody. I don't even remember who it was, but he said it's just the tradition.
Yes.
To give
that
to,
was Brennan
to
when he confirmed Brennan on the CIA.
He said yes. because it's just the tradition. To give the president his nominations,
yes.
and then you were
I lit a fire under everybody
yeah.
in Kentucky.
And so people were calling Rand Paul, and he said, "Yeah, you're right. That's not a.
I'm sorry, guys. Bad
my bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's actually not a good line of reasoning. Mm-hmm. I'll never do that again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I'll remind you that Eric Holder, and this is not going to be a popular statement. But Eric Holder is where he is today because Ronald Reagan
That's true.
Appointed him.
Yeah. He was first put in the system by Ronald Reagan.
By Ronald Reagan.
Absolutely.
So even after everything that he did in college.
That guy, the guy Christian Adamson, who was the, I think Adamson was his last name, Christian Adamson, who was the DOJ attorney that came out, I think he wrote a book about this, and he exposed some of the stuff with Eric Holder. Total racist, carried around a Black Panther card in his wallet.
Threatened up to blow up a building on his campus.
He said, I'm black before I'm, right before I'm, whatever, like before the Constitution, before all this, I'm black first.
Mm-hmm.
So, guy, totally unfit to serve, you know, so that would be not good.
So that's why this is critical. Absolutely critical.
Bob Dole.
Now, before you leave, make sure if you have not already that you hit the thumbs up or you hit the like and you hit the share. You can really help us. Don't forget, if you want to help us out, with the show, right? You guys have been helping us a lot. We got another super chat. Where did it go? Where are you? Oh,
right
from Mark Taylor.
Mark's always in there, man.
Yeah, Mark.
Appreciate you,
Mark. And Dragon's Talon.
Yeah, appreciate
you guys.
You guys
are heavy duty supporters. We appreciate you. You can also go and purchase at chrisannhall.com our gear. We have all kinds of gear. You can become a member at libertyfirstuniversity.com. So make sure that you are educated beyond belief. Or you can go to chrisannhall.com and just simply hit the donate button.
Dragon, what? What?
What?
Holder and McVeigh? Okay, now I got to look that up. I know, Holder, you know, gave the weapons to the Mexican drug cartels that killed the customs, the Border Patrol agent.
Right. Fast and Furious.
Dragon says he gave explosives to McVeigh.
Tim McVeigh.
So, like, that was not his first time. That's not his first time providing weapons.
I wouldn't have a hard time believing that. I simply would not have a hard time believing that.
That dude's wicked, man.
Yeah. Holder is absolutely wicked.
He's a scumbag.
Absolutely.
He's a guy that's, you know, America's a racist nation and blah, blah, blah.
He's worse than Barack Obama in hating
America.
No,
for sure. So. For sure. Yeah.
Definitely hers.
Definitely.
All right, guys. I just want to say thank you for joining us. And remember,
I got to go clean my guns.
So I just want to thank you. And remember, to be here tomorrow is going to be a very important show. Invite your friends. We're going to talk about this because these are really, really important cases. God bless you guys. We'll see you later.